It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 594. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Buddy, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and also facebook.com/MikeNationNet. You can also visit the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, the audio, the show notes. It's a great resource. Check it out. I had plans to do the security show on the ultimate Windows security guide for tonight's show. But that is going to be the next show. And I hope to record that before next Thursday night, because I'm not going to be here next Thursday night. I have tickets for the Green Day concert at the Tower Theater. Looking forward to it. I will find time to record the show. First thing I'm going to cover tonight is the Yahoo data breach. 500 million accounts. That happened 2 years ago, and they're only reporting it to the public now. That bothers me more than the breach. We're going to talk about that. I'm going to link some great articles where you can see what's happening. I'm going to give you my personal opinions on this, where I've never been happy with Yahoo security anyway for a long time. I'm going to outline some basic steps you can take to securing your online data and your personal information. But before we get started, I want to thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor of the Mike Tech Show podcast. You can easily remote in to your customers' systems with Instant House Call. It provides all of the features that you need. You can keep track of the time that you spend at your client. You can accept payment. There's features where you can actually get payments while you're connected. A feature that I've been using lately is the chat feature. If my client's sitting at the keyboard there at the desk, I'll bring up the chat window and we could chat because maybe we're not talking on the phone or we got disconnected. You can try Instant House Call free for 15 days by going to instanthousecall.com or clicking on the link on my website. Download the trial. Use the promo code Mike Tech Show. Give it a try. You got 15 days and you will love it and you'll be back to sign up. Tonight, not only am I going to be talking about the Yahoo data breach, but I got to catch up on voicemail and email. I have one voicemail I want to play and lots of emails that are a follow-up to a couple shows ago when I debated Apple's removal of the headphone jack from the iPhone 7. And I debated that with Winston Wolf, had a great time, great show, lots of positive feedback, but there's been a lot of response to that. And I don't want that to get too old and push those emails off. Tonight, the show just kind of developed because of everything that's happening. Let's first start with CNN's Money article, which is what I'm going to be quoting right now. Yahoo confirmed today that data associated with at least 500 million user accounts have been stolen in what may be one of the largest cybersecurity breaches ever. Let's stop right there. Yahoo has had a history of security breaches and problems securing your password. I'm sure there's many companies and services that can fall into this category, but anybody who personally knows me, I preach to avoid three things. Never have anything associated with Yahoo. Do not associate with AOL, anything with AOL, because those two companies, and I'm going to lump AOL with Yahoo, they are incapable of securing your personal information. They have proven that time and time again. They are incapable of protecting your information. And third, Target. The store Target has had so many breaches with their security, it's not even news anymore. They've had so many. If you're a family member of mine, my spouse, anybody I run into where we're talking about security, I tell them to only use cash in Target because they are incapable of securing your credit card. They've proven it. How many chances does someone get? There's at least 8 or 9 breaches that I know of at Target. How can they be given a third chance, a fourth chance, a fifth chance? It's crazy. Cash is the only way you should be shopping at Target. If you have a Yahoo.com email and do anything with any Yahoo services, I'm going to be giving you some suggestions on how to secure that information, but I don't think you can with Yahoo. My recommendation is find alternatives to services you currently use for Yahoo and go somewhere else. If you have an email account with Yahoo or AOL, get a Gmail account or get your own domain name and then add email. And not if you get your domain name at GoDaddy, please do not use GoDaddy email. Get a hosted exchange email like Office 365, SureWeb, AppRiver. Get a professional exchange hosted email service. They're very inexpensive. This is what you should be doing for email and securing your email. Let's continue here because I'm really bothered by this breach happening in 2014, and we're only learning about it now. The company said it believes a state-sponsored actor was behind the data breach, meaning an individual acting on behalf of a government. The breach is said to have occurred in late 2014. The account information may have included names, email addresses, telephone numbers, dates of birth, hashed passwords, and in some cases, encrypted or unencrypted security questions and answers. So let's think about this. If they have your name, your address, your phone number, and common security answers that you've given, anybody with this information can easily go to other services, banks, possibly get your information. If you have given information like this to Yahoo, my recommendation is anything that you hold of value, your bank, certainly your Yahoo account, you have to go and change your password. But one of the best ways, and I do this for any banking, I can't just go onto a website and go online. I want two-factor authentication. What that means is when you set that up with the financial institution, they have to send you a code on your cell phone, maybe via text message or via email. I recommend text message because it's easy to get that. And you have to have your phone in your possession and read that code. And you only have a few seconds to do this. And not only do you use a strong password, but you now have to enter that code and then you can log in. Security questions aren't good enough anymore. Even Apple has proven that they can be breached. Let's talk about, I was going to go into more detail about the breach, but I'm going to have great links for you in the show notes where you can read about this. It's horrible that they can breach this and then only tell you about it 2 years later. Verizon, in July, made the offer to purchase Yahoo for $4.8 billion, which that's another side story. Let's take a company that was $100 billion and bring it down to $4.8 billion, its value. The rise and fall of Yahoo. Verizon stated today that they're not backing out of the deal. Is Verizon still going to go through with the purchase? And then who's going to be on the hook to clean this up? Is it going to be Verizon or Yahoo? We don't even know who's going to be held to the fire to be able to resolve this, to patch the breaches. It's a mess. I want to thank Ken for sending me this link. A lot of this is common sense, but you usually don't hear it together like this. And it's a New York Times article. And just by the way, some advice. New York Times articles expire and they want you to stay logged in. They want you to pay for the service. So a lot of their articles are not always available. What I will do if I like an article, since I have the full Adobe Acrobat, I will quickly make it a PDF so I have it. Because sometimes if you go back, it's not available anymore. This is common with the New York Times. If you want to see that, I recommend getting to that quickly before the content expires or they require you to sign up. This advice is even if you don't have a Yahoo account. It just brings it to the forefront because of what they're reporting and what happened. So great questions and answers here. How do I know if my personal information was stolen? Yahoo said it had began notifying potentially affected users, but its breach was huge and similar attacks and smaller thefts happen all the time. The problem is not just with your Yahoo information. It's the other information that you're using the same things, the same answers to the security questions, the same password. You can't change your date of birth. You can't change your name. There's a lot of personal information that's now in the hands of someone that you don't want to have it. So now you got to start locking down anything that you're doing financial related. So protect that. Should I change my password? Yes. The first step, as always, is to change the password for sites that contain sensitive information like financial, health, or credit card data. Do not use the same password across multiple sites. How do I create a stronger password? I've done shows on using password managers like LastPass, KeePass. They're very good, but you got to have some discipline. Here's what I would like you to do. Look at those as a possibility because you can generate a random password for a lot of these sites. So how do you get it if you don't have that software? Well, they go into something pretty cool here that's a good recommendation. These sites, like 1Password or LastPass, create a unique password for each website you visit and store them in a database protected by a master password that you create. Password managers reduce the risks of reused passwords so that they are easy to decode. It's going to be very difficult if you use sites like this. If you must create your own password, try creating long, complex passwords consisting of nonsensical phrases or a one-sentence summary of a strange life event and then add numbers and special characters at the end. That's some good advice. They have an example here. The cat ate the cotton candy and then a number and a percent sign. Or if you're extra paranoid, consider mimicking this step. And this, they're quoting a Jeremiah Grossman, a web security expert, memorizes only a few passwords, including one to unlock his computer and then another to unlock an encrypted USB drive containing a file with a list of all of his passwords for dozens of services. None of his passwords are memorable because they are random. That's pretty cool. That I like. Two really long passwords and having that encrypted drive with a file, which you should password protect and have those random passwords. This is good advice. Are passwords enough? And they're not. If a site offers additional security features like secondary or two-factor authentication, enable them. Then, when you enter your password, you will receive a message, usually via text, with a one-time code that you must enter before you can log in. And many credit card and bank sites have this. Even Gmail has it. I strongly recommend you implement that. How can I stop my information from being stolen in the first place? Interestingly, you cannot. Regularly monitoring your financial records can help minimize the damage if someone gets your information, but only the companies storing your personal data are responsible for securing it. Consumers can slow down hackers and identity thieves, but corporate computer security and law enforcement are the biggest deterrents. They're not. I mean, our passwords and our identity are they're being compromised all the time. You have to have strong passwords. You have to have two-factor authentication when possible. This is very interesting, which is security questions. Now, there's a lot of different thoughts on security questions. This article says, forget about the security questions. Sites will often use security questions like, what was the name of your first school or your first pet or what's your mother's maiden name to recover a user's account if the password is forgotten. These questions are problematic because the internet has made public record searches a snap for the answer, and the answers are usually easy to guess. In a recent study, security researchers at Google found that with a single guess, an attacker would have a 19.7% chance of duplicating an English-speaking user's answers to the questions, what is your favorite food? It was pizza. Jonathan Zerinsky, a computer forensic expert, said he often answered these questions with an alternative password. If a site offers only multiple choice questions or requires only short passwords, he will not use it. Take a look at what the answers are available. Can you put all of your information? Can you put a long password for an answer to a security question? That's very interesting that a security expert won't use a site just based on how they handle security questions. There's a lot of debate on security questions. I remember a listener writing back saying that they spell their answers backwards and they know this, and then they add a number at the end. You got to get creative. You can't just use common English word dictionary answers for the security questions anymore. You got to get creative. At least think about spelling the answer backwards and adding a number and a symbol. And that number and symbol, maybe you use that for the different answers or just something random. But consider all of these things that I've just discussed on locking down and securing your information. Is it going to make it impossible for your information to be stolen? No. But we want to minimize it, and we want to make it difficult for anyone that does compromise some information of yours. They're not going to get everything. My advice, strong passwords, two-factor authentication when you can, get creative and different with the security answers, and avoid Yahoo, AOL, and Target. Or at least if you go to Target, just use cash. That's my opinion. Let's get to the voicemail and email for tonight. I have one voicemail, which was in response to the Apple removal of the iPhone jack. Give a listen to this.
Hey, Mike. My name is Josh from yourpcmagician.com. And I just wanted to make a statement in regards to your last episode talking about the iPhone 7 and Apple removing the headphone jack. This isn't really about whether I agree or disagree with either one of you. I think innovation is great. I think it was the right choice. But I did just want to add another element to think about. Your other host's argument was quality of audio and saying that the headphone jack provides a cleaner, better analog signal than what the digital lightning jack is going to provide. And I can refute that claim really quickly. Any audio that you listen to on your phone is digital anyways. Any audio. The only way you get high fidelity, original audio quality that your caller, you know, apparently is used to is to take a record that was recorded on site with the artist and play it back through an analog audio system with a speaker system with, you know, vacuum tubes, just completely analog system. And if that's not the way you're listening to the music, then there's a digital element introduced somewhere. So what I'm saying is the 3.5-inch or 3.5-millimeter headphone jack is an analog connection, but there's a conversion going on anyways from the original recording from the artist to MP3 or even AAC or uncompressed. It really doesn't matter. There's a conversion happening there from analog to digital, and then your phone is having to convert that back from digital to analog. Now, with the Lightning port, there's you're still listening to a digital signal. So no, you're not sitting there with a record player listening to a completely analog speaker system. But there is one less conversion going on, which could help actually preserve quality. And so therefore, I refute the claim that the 3.5-millimeter jack provides the original quality of the audio. I disagree with that because there's conversion going on. It's a digital file to be regardless, because your phone does not contain vacuum tubes. Your phone is not playing back analog, an analog source. So that's all I wanted to add. And it was a great show. I enjoyed listening to it. Been a long time listener, and I just thank you for your time. And I'd like to hear what your thoughts are about this now that I've presented this topic to you, that the audio we listen to, regardless of the output, the input, you know, what we're getting is still a digital file. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, Mike.
Josh, thank you very much, especially for supporting my case, but you did it in a very eloquent, technical way that I did not. The bottom line, though, I have an iPhone 7, and the same music coming from my iPhone 6S to my iPhone 7 using the Lightning jack, it absolutely sounds better. To my native ears with the earbuds that they provide, and I use the default earbuds on my iPhone 6S, and as a matter of fact, I did this before I packed up my 6S and sent it back. Some of my favorite music I wanted to play, and I wanted to hear the sound, and the sound quality is slightly better. Absolutely, it's better because now they have stereo sound. If you're just playing it right out of the speakers, it's phenomenally better. I agree with your assessment. I know a lot of people are hung up with the jack. Hey, that's why we have choices. That's why there's a Samsung phone. If you don't like that, if you have to have that analog 3.5-millimeter jack, don't buy the 7. Abandon it. It's simple. It's why we have choices. I don't have a problem with Apple's direction. That is not the case for many of you who've written here. This email is from Alex, and it's about the 3.5-millimeter jack objection. The constant pressure from some quarters for new and improved and cool and trendy is killing off older media. Dropping the 3.5-millimeter audio jack may be the first step in eliminating MP3. I don't know about that. Everybody thought vinyl was dead when the CD came out, and look at the comeback of vinyl. It's been tremendous. So I don't know. I don't know if that's true. The vast majority of important historic audio archives and audio books, the history of culture and literature, is in an MP3 format. We barely had time in the last 20 years to convert verbal history, books and music from vinyl and tape to MP3. Soon, lossless formats for cool and trendy, iconic brand prestige devices may proliferate. Society is already spiraling down toward black hole of barbaric ignorance in terms of visual media with the loss of nitrate films. The further loss of movies on VHS, thousands of titles have disappeared, and subsequently, the now unfashionable status of DVDs. Are you willing to risk a bet on how many pre-2010 film titles will ever be converted to 4K? The people in charge of our film history and audiobook music media are Avricius Lutz. Boy, I know I mispronounced that. I have less fear that music archives and music services that preserve old music will let them die, as such services remain popular, at least into the near future. Unfortunately, callous thugs like Hastings at Netflix have casually and carelessly deleted tens of thousands of pre-1990 titles from the catalog. Oh, I'm certain Hastings and other media moguls maintain their private collections of 10,000 movies that have been deleted from Netflix general availability. Titles may never be seen or heard of again unless you happen to know exactly what to look for and have access to a digital archive preserved by some billionaire's private foundation. The loss of literary and film history is a precursor to a decline of culture. This is how civilizations die. Alex, I admire your passion. He goes on here, which I'm going to keep going. One thing is, you got to look at Netflix as a business, because they only have X amount of storage to be able to provide all that. And if there's not enough people wanting to view the old films, unfortunately, they shouldn't be held as the preserver of films for a lifetime. What if Netflix goes out of business? What happens to their servers? What happens to all of their digital copies of everything? You're putting too much pressure on some of these services for doing some of these big scale, keep forever history of not popular items. If not enough people want to download that and rent it, they're not going to waste the space on it. I get it. But I also agree that there should be some sort of preservation available. I don't have that answer. You can't look for Netflix to provide that answer. Just like you can't look to Apple. You gotta be reasonable on the expectations of some of these companies. I know you have a legitimate need for quality telecom and file transfer remote access in your IT business. I cannot imagine why eliminating a 3-millimeter hole in your gadget makes any kind of difference. It is a prestige factor. Look at me, I'm special. Music aficionado. I can afford devices that broadcast lossless audio wirelessly. I'm a technology aristocrat. Well, that's some people. I don't put myself in that position. I am retired. I do not allow advertising or intrusive tracking or solicitation of any kind in my home or on my devices. Yes, I know IPID is unavoidable. I have no need or desire to use smartphones. I use a $10 to $20 cash tossable feature phones for telecom. I use Androids as digital MP3 players, and they are $20. Throwaway and cheaper than Sony Apple MP3 devices. I use Androids for audiobooks, radio talk stream, capture, and music players, but not as telephones. I do not create subscription accounts for data and cell services. I am not tracked. I get no spam. Androids require no proprietary software or hardware as MP3 playback devices, so Apple's cool and trendy mechanisms do not affect my ability to listen to any media. There will always be inexpensive, high-quality devices for my media playback. I listen to the great books and many forms of music, not just pop rock. I suppose it's my fault I don't have millions set aside to archive and protect our music, film, and literary history from the tech zombies. The danger is that enlists will revise standards and casually make affordable and easily transferable formats obsolete. Market forces aimed at replacing existing technology with profit-generating substitutes that supercode inexpensive devices at the expense of culture, history, and continuity, with the resultant loss of millions of titles. Welcome to the idiocracy. Thank you for taking the time to write that. I really appreciate it. And I wanted to read your entire email to everybody. I get it. I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree with everything, but that's why we're here. And I wanted to voice your opinion, because I know there's a large portion of people that are agreeing with what I just read on your email. I do want to see some type of preservation happen, and I just don't know how that's going to happen in our culture. Unfortunately, as you stated, the market will dictate the demand and they will produce, except some things like Apple and other companies nudge it in one direction, like removing that 3.5 millimeter jack. I can't believe how much debate happens for that. Let's keep going here with some more really good emails. I'm tired of technology for technology's sake. Thought your show and the NPR One brought up some interesting points. As an iPhone for years user, this sort of stuff makes me want to switch. Who cares? It's just a cord. Cords almost always provide better speeds, sounds, etc., no matter what it is. This from Brian. You've lost one of the pieces, which is that they provide it a cord, which is the Lightning earbuds. And as I stated earlier in the show, I've used that and the sound was better. So they do provide a cord. Yes, they're moving to wirelessly and trying to push everybody to that, but they did provide corded earbuds. You don't have to pay any more money for that. He has a link here to an NPR show. It's titled Hit the Road Headphone Jack, New iPhones Goes Wireless. But they still have a wired capability. And I agree with something you stated here. Wired will always, always be better than wireless. There's absolutely no question in my mind. This is from Paul. Hi, Mike. Paul from San Antonio here. After listening to the Mike Tech Show episode 592 regarding Apple's decision to eliminate the 3.5 millimeter audio jack from the iPhone 7, I must say that I agree entirely with Winston Wolf's assessment. However, I believe that the problem this decision creates extends well beyond the issues that both of you mentioned in your debate. I wanted to call in and leave you a voicemail, but I tend to go in depth and didn't want to get cut off repeatedly by your voicemail system. So I decided to publish my points of views on my personal tech blog. I used to post on examiner.com, but they have since been purchased and closed down. So I'm starting to post on my own site and hope to make more time to keep up with it. A link to this particular post is provided below, and I will put that in the show notes for you, Paul, and for everybody else to click and read this. I totally understand if you simply want to summarize this on a show and share the link so that your listeners can read it. That's exactly what I'm doing, in full if they choose. Keep up the good work with the Mike Tech Show, anxiously awaiting the next Tech Vets podcast as well. So, Paul, thank you for taking all that time and putting that post together, and I will absolutely link it. The final email, not of the show, but the final email about the 3.5 millimeter jack being removed. This is from Scott English. It's a link to the new Belkin splitter. The Lightning splitter. It's not pretty, but it will split the Lightning jack so you can have a charger on one and your Lightning earbuds on the other, or any device, whatever. You can have two connected to the Lightning jack, but it's not available yet. It just says coming soon. So I wish it was available, but I'll have that link so you can check it out. Scott, thank you for sending me that. Kate, who's a regular listener of the show, and I actually want to talk to her separately. Maybe I can get Kate on and her and I can debate this on a show as a guest. We could pick a time when she's available. She's heard me recommend driver Macs all the time. She has had a little nightmare where it looks and acts and smells like malware on a test system that she used. Kate, I'm wondering what version you downloaded. I've installed version 8 for Driver Max. I'm a pro user of it, meaning I have an account. I know it may look like Slimware Utilities and some other things. I've had it find unfindable drivers, and it has helped me. And then I remove it. I don't leave it on the system. So I don't know if maybe something's coming in afterwards or what. I know Kate's capabilities, and she would, I know, download it the right program from the right site. But I'm wondering if there, on your download, was there something else in there that I'm just not seeing on the downloads that I have used? I'm going to give this more analysis and more thought on my end, but I would like feedback on Driver Max. I have been using that, and that has been saving me on unfindable drivers for systems that I'm working on. I quickly use it. I sign in and register because I'm allowed like 20 or 21 registrations, but then I remove it. So for $39, $2 a pop for using it, hey, I'm finding drivers that you just can't find, and I'm saving a ton of time. But I'm not seeing the malware that you're seeing. I use Bitdefender, but I'm not using the Bitdefender security suite. Are we getting false positives here? Because that happened with Deep Sound too. There should be more discussion on this. I'm definitely going to hold off and installing Driver Max based on your email. And I trust Kate. I want more listeners to weigh in on this using Driver Max. Are you seeing that it's causing malware, that it's doing bad things to a system? I was in shock. She used Revo Uninstaller to remove it, and the sheer number of left-behind files, folders, and register keys was as impressive as any malware I've ever removed. Kate, I absolutely, based on your email, installed Driver Max on a computer, and I used Revo Uninstaller, and it had to be the fewest. There was no registry entry. There was like one extra entry. It was the cleanest I've ever seen a piece of software removed. So right off the bat, when I seen that, what you reported, something's wrong. There's a disconnect here with Driver Max. I definitely want to research this further, but I wanted to put it out there. I can get feedback from everybody, and I want to see what's happening with Driver Max. So Kate, thank you. And we will continue the Driver Max discussion. This is from Ben, and he wanted to know what I use. Hi, Mike. I have a large 8 to 10 terabyte data migration over the weekend and was wondering what you use to copy very large amounts of data. TerraCopy, RoboCopy, RichCopy. I actually have used RoboCopy with scripts that Winston Wolf has written years ago, and it worked very, very well. I've had luck with large amounts of data and get a great log from SyncBack. And SyncBack Free works great on lots of operating systems. You need the pro version for Windows Server. But SyncBack has been awesome. Anytime I got to do any kind of a copy or a transfer, SyncBack will keep trying to copy, but it won't go forever or hang up or lock up. It'll just move on and log that as an error. And then you can look and say, oh, that file, it didn't copy. And for what reason? Maybe it was locked. Maybe the path of the subdirectories was too long. There's detailed reason as to why it's not copied. I love the log files for SyncBack. Another email from Ben, and he followed up after I wrote back recommending SyncBack. He says, darn, I forgot to add, which version of Acronis do you use when migrating client data from hard drive HDDs to SSDs? Does the home version allow for multi-systems use, or do you a more professional and costly version? Acronis 2015. I had to remove that in order to get Shadow Protect working when I upgraded to Windows 10. For backups, I agree with you and use Shadow Protect for myself and my clients. You can't beat it for performance and reliability, but it's not the best offline bootable from CD or USB tool for handling multi-partitions like Ghosts used to in the corporate world where I came from years back. And I think you and I got laid off around the same time. Because it's a file and not sector-based, you had a bit more control on moving to different drive sizes when SP, when Shadow Protect can only go to the same or larger hard drives. Yes, is Acronis a more modern version of Ghost? It does a little more, but you know, you're right. I think Acronis is very close to what Ghost used to be, only you got more capability. I love the cloning feature of Acronis. There is a place for both in this world, Ben, as you see, and a need for both of them. Shadow Protect, the hardcore backups. Acronis, I use for quick imaging and cloning. This is Alex from Indianapolis. WSUS offline. Just a quick note. I know you had a formula for fixing Windows 7 update, but I did the following. Is this similar to your solution? Last time I installed a Windows 7 Pro OEM, I simply ran the update, then downloaded the WSUS offline USB installer, which gathered over 200 Windows 7 patches. I pulled the Ethernet plug and ran the WSUS USB tool, which installed about 160 Windows 7 OS patches. At this point, it said finished. I then proceeded to run Windows 7, search for updates, and it pulled the final 60 or 70 updates without any undue delays. Overall, it was about a five-hour installation, mostly unattended. The Windows toolbox is great. Much thanks for the show, Alex. Alex, it's sort of what I have done. That's a great solution. Different systems, I've done different things. I have a couple updates that I run on a new Windows 7 install. And if I have the time to let it run all night, it'll just run and download everything. But a lot of times I do what you did, which is run the WSUS update, pull the network adapter cable, and just let it rip. And it does a lot. And that has gotten me past lots of updates and a lot of pain and suffering. But you got to have a lot of time to let that run through the course of getting them all. This is Roger. Hey, Mike. Windows 10 automatic downloading of updates. The question makes me feel dumb, but nevertheless, I'm stuck. One of my locations has limited bandwidth still, and when Windows 10 automatically starts downloading an update during business hours, it can cause major issues. I know the settings can be changed for restarting during off hours, but I can't find anything related to scheduling automatic download updates. Internet research has not yielded any answer to me yet. So, is there a setting for scheduling Windows 10 update downloads after hours? No, but I'm going to give you the solution. Put remote access on the systems, like Instant House Call, with unattended access, and then go in to the services and stop the Windows Update service. Disable it, so in case they reboot, it won't start. Then, when you want to launch it, log in, or you could create a schedule and schedule a batch file as administrator that could start that at a certain time after hours and restart that service, then let it do the updates. I really think we're sort of on our own and we got to get creative with the tools that we're presented with. And if you stop the service, it will not update. Then you just got to figure out a way to remote in and start the service. Instant House Call, perfect. So you can remote in. I have a couple emails that I'm going to save for the future. I want to read this. And then I got some music for tonight. This email is from C. Ray. I wanted to take a few minutes and express my gratitude for your advice and recommendations that you share with your listeners each week. You may not be fully aware of the positive impact that you have on listeners like myself. So I wanted to share my story. In 2013, a listener posted a question on how to gain more experience dealing with servers, and you recommended that college classes with labs might be an option. Over the years, I have grown to value the highly relevant information that you share, and your recommendations for college classes was exactly what I needed. I already had an associate's degree in computer programming, but I decided to pursue my Bachelor's of Science in Information Technology. This past August, I graduated from Franklin University with a 4.0 summa cum laude. Congratulations. That is awesome. I am so glad. Additionally, I was accepted into Liberty University's Master of Science in Cybersecurity program last week and will begin classes in October. When it is all said and done, I plan to teach some IT courses as an adjunct or full-time capacity in the near future. You and your support of my family made this a reality. I have found your stories from In the Trenches and those from Marvin B. to be especially helpful and encouraging when problems arise. I am part of a family-owned business in Central Virginia that was started by my grandfather in 1951. Our company focuses on commercial copier, scanner, and server-based networks. The technology has evolved quite a bit over the years, but the concept of putting relevant information in the hands of qualified users remains constant. The problems that you, Marv, and I experience on a daily basis can often be quite a departure from what academia tends to focus upon. Absolutely. When I teach, it is my hope that I will be able to provide context and balance to issues related to IT. Oh, that is the way to do it. And relay the experiences that you and I experience every day. Again, I cannot thank you enough for your time commitment each week with the podcast and offer my most heartfelt thanks. Blessings, Ray. Ray, thank you so much for that. It's emails like this that keeps me going, and just I love hearing the feedback. I love your approach, and that's how teaching should be, which is you have the textbook, but then you need to bring in the real life and the practical experience. It's like I told my engineers who were going for their Microsoft certification years ago. When you're there at a question, there's the Microsoft answer in order to get the proper grade and pass the exam. And then there's the real world answer that we know from living in the trenches is the answer. And there's a mixture. And to get young minds to think about that and putting it together is the way to do it. I hope what you've said here is what we see more teachers and instructors come from, which is, yes, you got to have that academia background and textbook background. That's good. There's a purpose for that. And you got to have the foundation. Couple that with the real world practical experience. That's the way to go. Good luck, C. Ray. And please follow up. I want to know how you're making out and what direction and what you're doing. So next week, there's no show because I have tickets to see Green Day next Thursday night at my favorite venue, which is the Tower Theater. Well, tomorrow night, I'm going to the Tower Theater to see Brian Wilson's 50th anniversary of the album Pet Sounds. I can't wait to go there. As a matter of fact, I'm going with my daughter-in-law because she's the only other Beach Boys fan in the family. I'm looking forward to that. This song is not from Pet Sounds, but it's one of my favorites, and I'm so glad that it is in the set list because Brian Wilson, which if you don't know, wrote almost all of the Beach Boys hits. Give a listen. This is one of my favorite songs.
Secrets to in my room. In my room. In my room. In this world, I lock out all my worries and my fears. In my room. In my room. My room. Do my dreaming and my scheming. side. Laugh at yesterday. Now it's dark and I'm alone, but I won't be afraid in my room. In my room, in my room, in my room, in my room, in my room.
That is In My Room from the Beach Boys. I'll have a link where you can buy lots and lots of great music from Amazon, the Beach Boys. And can't wait till tomorrow night. Going to have a great time. I hope to record next week's show sometime either over the weekend or early in the week. And I will put it out probably on Wednesday because of being tied up Thursday night. Look for that show. And that's the Ultimate Windows Security Protection Guide. I still want to do that. I have all my notes. I have all my links. It's just ready to rock and roll. And that was going to be tonight. But then with the Yahoo security breach and just so much feedback on the iPhone, the removal of that 3.5 millimeter jack, I had to cover all that and catch up on that. Thank you for all of your feedback, all of your participation in the show. I love it. Thank you so much. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook so you can see when I'm going to be recording the next show. Next week, I won't be here that Thursday, but the following week, I will. I will see everybody then. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.